Hello and welcome to the 8th episode of the Language Meanderings podcast. And for those of you who listened to the 3rd episode, in which I was describing some of my son's speech pronunciation in Spanish, I mentioned that I contacted a bilingual speech therapy clinic in Houston. And today I had an interview with Evan Mejia, who is the founder and co-owner of the bilingual speech therapy of Houston. So here's the interview that I had with him, and I hope you enjoy this.
Hello, buenos dias.
Yes, buenos dias.
Evan Mejia.
Yes, hi, good afternoon.
Oh, you speak English, okay.
I do, yes, I do. Actually, but it would be nice to speak a little bit in Spanish. I do have some questions that I would like to ask you.
Sure.
So could you tell me a little bit about the bilingual speech therapy in Houston?
Okay. So we've been in business for several years now. I think 2007. We opened our doors, provide services to children and adults, primarily children at this point, typically in the Houston area and around Houston as well. We service all areas of speech pathology, and whatever is involved, you know, it has to do with communication, so understanding, using language, speech production, alternative communication, and feeding and swallowing is needed, as well as cognitive issues or cognitive linguistic issues that people might be experiencing after an event, a medical event.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if that's what you needed to know, or
yeah, just to have an idea of what kind of situations would require a speech therapist for their intervention.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, sometimes there's a medical condition that's attached to the speech and language or communication or swallowing disorder, but not always. And so we work with anybody who may have difficulty in an area that we cover. So again, sometimes there's a clear reason why, sometimes there isn't.
And in terms of like a language kind of correcting pronunciation, how is a speech therapist background different from, let's say, an English teacher giving some exercises?
Okay, so are you talking about for like a language disorder or a language, so a child or an adult?
A child, for example. No disorder per se, but just what would be the benefits of, let's say, going to see a speech therapist?
So we work pretty much with disorders. So basically, when something is not the way it should be, the except that would be maybe accent modification. But typically, we work with individuals, children or adults, who have some kind of, they're not where they need to be with their communication for whatever reason. With a child, it might be that there's a medical issue, or maybe there isn't. Maybe they're behind with their communication skills. So we don't teach for, let's say, for perfection, more or less. We teach for survival. That's the way I would describe it. We work on things for survival purposes.
Okay, I see. Do you notice with bilingual, trilingual children if there's a delay in their speech development?
Okay, good question. Delay, I wouldn't necessarily call delay. There's a difference for sure. Are you familiar with the ASHA website? Speech Language Hearing Association?
No, I haven't checked that out yet, but could you give me that link again?
Yes, asha.org.
Okay, I'll take a look.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'll find some really useful information related to bilingualism. I don't think they talk about trilingualism or more than two languages, but a lot of the same information will apply. The way the language is developed is different, of course, from somebody who speaks one language, and sometimes they handle it as if it can seem as if there's a delay, but that's not always the case.
And what advice would you give parents with bilingual children? Should they detect anything in the speech development of the children, or should they just
let
time?
Let me give you another link. Mm-hmm. That first link is a good link for general. general bilingual information. There's another link, NIDCD.
Okay.
NIH.gov, and these are actually on the website. Mm-hmm. So I believe they're on the website under resources, something like that. But basically, we look at developmental norms, look at ranges of development. So, for example, most children are set to produce their first word at around 12 months,
mm-hmm.
But it doesn't have to happen exactly at 12 months. So we put a little leeway into those types of things. But if there's ever any suspicion of a delay or disorder, one thing I ask parents to do is to go to that NIDCD website and complete the little questionnaire that's on there. It's a yes-no questionnaire. And it's based on age and development and what should be there by a certain age. If there are a certain number of missing items for a child, then the parent is prompted to talk to a speech pathologist or a doctor.
Okay. And what kind of a training does a speech pathologist have to go through before certification?
Training?
Yes. What kind of training?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you have to have a bachelor's and a master's, and then you have to go through a practicum that's 9 months long, and then you do, not a practicum. It's called a clinical fellowship year. It's 9 months long. While you're in school, you do have different experiences that are considered practicums. They're like internships. So after the master's degree, you have basically a year of practice, more or less, and then you're free to roam.
Okay. Do you see this as a growing industry of studies?
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. What kinds of possibilities are there? Do you see mostly bilingual families as a possibility, or do you see, and you said in this case, disorders for your patients?
Do I see a particular area of growth? Is
that the question? Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A particular area of growth. Are you talking about the demand for the service or demand for sure?
Yeah, for the service, and also if people are interested in studying to become a certified pathologist, like what kinds of career opportunities do they see, or in the market, what kind of possibilities are there?
Okay, yeah, there's lots of different opportunities you can get into when you obtain the degree. You can work with any type of population that you'd like. You can do all English if you'd like to, right? You can work with children, you can work with adults, you can work in hospitals, nursing homes, schools, in people's homes. You can treat people who have no verbalization at all, who you communicate with machines, more or less, or with devices. So there are a lot of opportunities in that regard. And then in regards to increasing demand for the service, yes, there's an increasing demand for the service, and part of it is related to a limited number, I think, of potential slots for people to actually immerse themselves in the field.
Okay. And what kind of a background should somebody have? Should they have an interest in studying language or studying communication skills? What's a good background for a speech pathologist?
One thing that you'll find when you ask that question is that most people that actually choose the profession didn't start out with any interest in the profession at all. So have people who have lots of different grounds. So there's no one clean and neat answer for the particular question, but the skills that you need to, or the skills that you get at the most, probably fall under the realm of psychology, definitely medical issues for sure, sometimes sociology, you know, social work. You can do a little bit of everything. So.
Okay, it seems it's wide sweeping and kind of disciplinary.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. And again, it's interdisciplinary for sure. And you also do get chances to work with people from a variety of professions.
Okay.
You cross with a lot of professions as well.
Okay. And how much of your time, since it's a bilingual center, how much of your time do you spend working with Spanish speakers?
Okay. How much time spent working with Spanish speakers? In this particular setting, I want to say at least 90% of the time. but it really depends on the day.
And where do you see a lot of those Spanish speakers coming from? Are they immigrant population, or are they a local population that's born in the Houston area, or do you see a mix?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we see a mix for sure, from all over the place. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Houston or not, but we have a lot of people from a lot of places in this city. So it's always growing. The diversity is always increasing.
Okay. Well, that's very interesting to hear the background of. For the speech therapy and the pathology, and to get an idea of that field, because this is something I was researching for this podcast, because I was taking in consideration my son's pronunciation. He's growing up in a trilingual environment. I speak to him in English, and his mother speaks to him in Spanish and French, and I was noticing certain things in his pronunciation. For example, like instead of telling me tengo frío, he'll say tengo fío, or so he'll drop certain consonants like the letter R or the letter L when it's in a consonant cluster. So he'll say like he's 3 years old.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And also I noticed, I was doing research on this, something similar to almost a Cuban Spanish pronunciation when in between two vowels, certain consonants will kind of disappear. So if he's telling me that he's tired, he'll say something like cansao. Or if he's saying the word nothing, it sounds more like na instead of nada. So he does that quite frequently, and I was just wondering if those were things to kind of be cautious of, or just let him develop and it will correct itself.
Mm-hmm. That's a tough question to answer, because I don't know him, but a lot of things go into whether someone needs intervention. We definitely, the two most important things before anything else are making sure that everything is getting in okay, so meaning vision and hearing, making sure that the opportunities are there for learning, whatever the skills are. The other very important thing to think about is the child's age, mm-hmm. and exposure to languages, whichever languages they are, and the language models, of course. Mm-hmm. So these things have to be addressed before making the determination whether someone needs service or not. So this is the part where again, it's very important to look at the child's age and what he should be doing for the age.
Okay, reaching kind of mile markers.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Reaching mile markers.
Yeah, milestones.
Or milestones. Sorry.
So, mm-hmm. So basically, what we do is we typically, with a child, we help kids who are behind. And a lot of the population that we work with is, not all, but a lot of it is significantly behind.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
We work with kids who are maybe 3 years old and not speaking at all.
Oh, okay.
Well, 4 years old and you can't understand anything they say. So certain ages, there should be a certain level of what we call speech intelligibility, like you should, as a parent or as a stranger, should be able to understand it. At age 3, it's not at 100% yet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. By which age would you say it should be 100?
I would say at around age 4, and it would take some time around that.
Okay. Okay. Well, very interesting. And could you give me your name?
My name is Ivan, I-V-A-N.
Oh, okay.
M-E-J-I. My name is on the website, too.
Oh, okay. Perfect. So I will... provide a link to the website and also include the links that you recommended for those resources for finding about kind of bilingual education or bilingual milestones for the children.
Great.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciated this interview.
Thank you. If you could send us a link to your podcast, that'd be great.
Oh, of course. Yes, I'll be happy to do that. So I'll send you an email.
All right. It's referrals@bilingualspeech.org.
Okay, perfect. So I appreciate that.
Right, thank you.
Yeah, you have a good day. If you would like to get more information about the Bilingual Speech Therapy of Houston, you can go to their website, which is www.bilingualspeech.org. You can schedule a free 30-minute consultation. And also, if you would like to schedule an English class with me or hear more about my language meanderings, you can visit my website at hugginsinternational.com. That's H-U-G-G-I-N-S. Or send me an email at hugginsinternational@gmail.com. So thank you very much for listening, and I look forward to the next podcast. Thank you.